Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay? This is a little far from my mouth, so I might have to. Can't hear me at all? I have to work the microphone, work the laser pointer, and work the computer. The hands of a surgeon. What will you ask me to do next? So let's start with a prayer. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. Our Lady of Guadalupe, pray for us. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. Amen. So fasten your seatbelts because this is going to be a whirlwind tour. This is a presentation that I normally give to our medical students at our boot camp every summer for the last 5 years. And so this is a lot of scientific information. I'll gloss over some of that stuff, but you'll be able to see that all the topics that we need to talk about in relationship to contraception involve a lot of different areas. It's not just a medical area. And for people to understand exactly why I'm coming from the point of view that I'm presenting and what I'm trying to tell you is the truth about these pharmaceuticals that really cure no disease and are really, in my opinion, are nothing more than a lifestyle drug. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm just trying to present the truth as I know it based on science. So my topic in reference to evidence-based medicine is what we're asked to do in medicine. The standards of care for the practice of medicine are derived from medicine that is based on evidence that appears in medical literature. And so everything that I present to you with its references, and if you want copies of the slides later, I'm sure that Molly's group will be able to make them available to you because they're not proprietary, so you can have access to them, but they're all referenced in medical journals, and so the information is accurate and valid. As I started out yesterday, and just as an overview, anthropologically speaking, the body of a human being can never be reduced merely to a group of cells. It's not just a clump of cells that we're talking about here. It's not just something that you call pathologically just, oh, it's really not a baby, it's really not anything. Once the egg and the sperm comes together, you have a new human being with 46 chromosomes and all the genetic information that if you allow its growth and progression to go forward will become what we are all here in the room. We were all at one time zygotes, and then we were fetuses, we were embryos, and then we were fetuses, and then we were infants, and then we were toddlers, and then we were adolescents, and then we were adults. So you just can't chop and draw a line somewhere. So Dignitas Personae in 2008 told us that the fruit of human generation from the first moment of its existence that the zygote has formed demands the unconditional respect that is morally due to a human being and his or her bodily integrity. Theologically speaking, the human embryo has the dignity of a person. It is a human being. These are the battlegrounds and the laws and the fights that are going on all the time. And you may be asking yourself, what does this have to do with contraception? And believe me, we'll get there. But this just lays the foundation for what it is that these drugs and chemicals are doing when we're talking about human sexuality and human life. The origin of its human life has its authentic context in a marriage between a man and a woman and in the family, where it is generated through an act which expresses the reciprocal love between a man and a woman. The husband and the wife mimic and get to experience Trinitarian love. Now, what does that mean? Well, what it means in my estimation, as far as breaking things down, I try to keep things simple. The father loves the son so much, and the son loves the father so much, that that love becomes the third person of the Trinity. And that person is called the Holy Spirit, which we profess every Sunday in our creed, is the Lord, the giver of life, who proceeds from the father and the son. And so a husband and wife in conjugal intimacy get to exchange that same love that exists between the father and the son. And in the presence of the Holy Spirit, that love becomes a third person, a human being that will exist for all of eternity in God's plan of salvation. So what we're doing in marital love and what we're doing in marital intimacy and what we're doing in our procreative aspects of our relationships is saying yes to love and life and yes to babies and bonding, and contraception does not. So what's the problem? I put problem in quotes here because it really isn't technically a problem, except that what our culture is telling us, it is a problem. So we have somewhere around 61 million women that are in childbearing years between the ages of 15 and 44. About 43 million of them are reproductive age or sexually active and don't want to conceive but could. Most women only want two children. There are some that want more, and you hear a lot of stories and people talking about having many more children. But typically, the U.S. woman only wants to have two children. And so to achieve two, she has to be avoiding, and I hate that word, which is why I put it in quotes, because to me, as an English major in college, the word avoid means I want to avoid it. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go anywhere near there. I like the word postpone. I'm going there, but just right, not right now. And so postpone is a much better word for language rather than the word avoid. So about 99% of women between those ages of 15 and 44 who have been sexually active have at some time or another used some form of birth control, and only about 2% use natural family planning. And natural family planning is non-contraceptive, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Currently, 62% are using contraception, 28% are not because they're either pregnant or breastfeeding, or they're infertile, or they're postpartum, or they're abstinent or virginal. So we have about 10% of the population who are sexually active who are at risk for an unwanted or unplanned pregnancy not using contraception, and you have about an 85% chance of conceiving in 1 year if you're sexually active and not using anything. And the highest risk for conception is between the 15 and 19-year-olds. So 67% of reproductive women use reversible methods, and 77% versus 40% in the married versus unmarried. So if you want to see why we have so many unmarried children of unmarried relationships happening, it's because there's a very low percentage. Even though it's available, as readily available as the married, and I'm not condoning that, but you can see it is almost half. The cohabitors, only 90% of them use contraception. The remaining, they rely on sterilization, and the majority of these are female. And this is the first place that you're going to see this because, in my opinion, being in women's health care for 40 years, this is an attack on women. And so even though there are men in this audience, there are men who love the women that are sitting next to them or are in relationship to them in their family, whether they're mothers or sisters or wives or fiancés. And so we need to take a look at this because I'll talk a little bit about the theology of why this attack on women is the way it is in contraception. Under the age of 30, the pill is the leading method. Over the age of 35, sterilization is the leading method. The majority of women who do use the pill, only 10% roughly of males use condoms, and less than that with a female condom. We have about 6% of the population using long-active reversible contraceptives. That's the new euphemistic term in medicine for IUDs, intrauterine devices. Now they call them LARCs. And that's the number one recommended by the CDC, Center for Disease Control, contraceptive for teenagers. And why is it recommended for teenagers? Because they're kind of not as reliable at remembering to take their pills or remembering to carry a condom around with them or remembering to have a spermicide in their purse and says, in case something comes up, because the guys are never prepared because they don't care. And so if you put an IUD in a 16-year-old, some of the IUDs are good for 10 years. So you don't have to worry about anything for 10 years. So it's hands-off, hands-free. It's like talking on your Bluetooth in your car. You don't have to dial anything. You don't have to do anything. You just have to let it go, and it's there. And so they're recommending that that's what they use. I told you that about 2% use NFP. That's actually now down to about 1%. And so we have a very, very small percentage of population that's accessing that. And as I mentioned, the CDC is recommending the LARCs for teenagers. Sterilization is the leading method among blacks and Hispanics. And so when you talk about this eugenics that was mentioned yesterday and this morning with this whole contraception issue,
my personal opinion again, and I agree with what Bishop Thomas said and what Michael Boris said yesterday. There is a tree in our culture that has branches of abortion and euthanasia. And the roots of that tree, in my opinion, are contraception. That is the root of the tree. And you can go after the branches and prune it and trim it all you want, but if you don't go after this, and it's our fault, meaning doctors, and I'm standing up here in front of you, and I'm one of them, and I'll tell you a little bit about my transition and my conversion if we get to the end here and we have a little bit of time. So there are about 7 million who use barrier methods, 2.5 million teenagers that are using contraceptives, the majority of them the pill. Some of them are still using withdrawal. Some of them, very few of them, a little bit more than half, use condoms. A very small percentage of them are using LARCs. And about 1 in 9 have used emergency contraception. If you're looking at Catholics and Protestants, the extent of the problem, it's almost the same. And so it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what the church teaches. This is what is reality in our culture and in our society. And most contraceptives, almost all now because of the Obama mandate with the Affordable Care Act, mandate coverage for contraception. And we'll talk a little bit about the economics of this, but somebody's got to pay for it. They may be free to the patient, but somebody's got to pay the companies that are manufacturing these products. And so we'll get into that a little bit. One of the things that I found when I started getting into my pro-life ministry 20 years ago was that I looked at, you heard earlier if you listened to Elizabeth Johnson about some of the tactics that we have to use in the pro-life world. So when I want my statistics and somebody wants to argue with me that what I'm saying is wrong, I got all these statistics from the Guttmacher Institute, which is the analytical arm of Planned Parenthood. And so if somebody wants to argue with me about, oh, that's not true, those numbers aren't correct, I said, well, just go to Planned Parenthood's website and look under Guttmacher Institute, and that's what you'll find. So keep that in mind. Now, some of this you heard a little bit yesterday about population control and we need contraception, and you heard some of the fallacies that were brought up. These are the birth rates that are projected out there. In the United States, we have a birth rate of 2.06, and that's only because of the Hispanic population in the United States. If we didn't count Hispanics in the United States, our birth rate would be down around 1.7. You need 2.1 for zero population growth. My wife is in this audience, okay? So I'll use us as an example. The two of us leave the room. In order for the population in the room to stay the same, two more have to come into the room to have zero growth of population in the room, okay? 2.1 because there's miscarriages. And so we have a group of countries that are not at replacement value, and you look at Catholic countries like Italy and Spain, they will be contracepting themselves out of existence within the next generation unless something happens. Germany and Italy now are paying couples euros to have children, because their populations are so low and because they're not growing. A little bit of the spiritual dimension. The reason why the church teaches what it teaches and the reason why this is even an issue and a topic for conversation, and this is all in Humanae Vitae, and I'm so thrilled to be able to give this presentation in relationship to the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae because it was a milestone in my own personal conversion. The unitive and the procreative elements of marital love can never be divided. If it is divided, then God is left out of the marriage. You separate love and life. You separate babies and bonding. That's what the marital act is all about. God could have created new life any way that he wanted. He could have babies grow on trees. Boy trees, girl trees. Somebody wants one. It's the spring, I'll take that one. Guy takes it down, you go home and take it down. Any way he wanted. But he decided, male and female, he created them. And the two become one. And my wife and I do chastity and abstinence talks for 7th and 8th graders in our parish. And I ask the kids, what is the first commandment that God gave man? And of course, they all say the Moses first commandment, I am the Lord thy God. I said, nope, go back further. In the garden, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. This is what I charge you to do. And if you read John Milton, I told you I was an English major, so it's warning. in the 1600s who wrote Paradise Lost, he tells the story that the reason for the fall of the angels is because Lucifer found out that God was going to create a creature that he was going to give a body to and the ability to co-create new life. And he said, what am I, chopped liver? And a battle ensued, and a third of the angels were swept from heaven. And so John Milton portrays that in his Paradise Lost. So our catechism tells us, however, that periodic continence, that means abstinence from engaging in any marital activity, that is, the methods of birth regulation based on self-observation of infertile periods, is in conformity with the objective criteria of morality, whereas in contrast, every action, whether in anticipation of or the development of its natural consequences, proposes as an end or as a means to render procreation impossible, is intrinsically evil. People don't like that phrase. They don't like that word. The church does not use it frequently. It does not use it often, but it uses it very judiciously in relationship to contraception. This, from the Catechism, a couple of paragraphs later, is something that is very difficult. And if you heard me yesterday, I talked a little bit about our infertility problems at the beginning of our marriage and that my wife and I have an adopted child as well as a biological child. But children are not something that's owed to one. They are the gift, the supreme gift of a marriage. Totally a gift. They are not objects. You don't have a right to a child. It's not a piece of property. The only right that the only one that has a right is the child, who has the right to be the fruit of a specific act of conjugal love of the parents and the right to be respected as a person from the moment of conception. And so all you have to do is watch Dr. Who, Dr. Seuss's, you know, a person's a person no matter how small, and you know that this is what we are and how we all started. Humana Vitae tells us that any direct interruption of either the generative process already begun, such as an IUD or an abortive fashion if the embryo is already involved, or any willed and procured abortion, even if it's for medical or therapeutic reasons, are absolutely excluded for regulating birth, and any sterilization, whether temporary or permanent, is excluded. Anything that would render procreation impossible is completely prohibited. Life once conceived has to be protected. This is Donum Vitae from John Paul II in 1987. And he also goes on to say that even though all of this is a teaching of the church, the suffering of spouses who are unable to have children or who are afraid of bringing children into the world that may be handicapped or suffering from some sort of genetic birth defect is something that all of us need to evaluate and properly care for and take into prayer. In his encyclical, The Gospel of Life, which was mentioned just recently by Bishop Thomas in 1995, John Paul warns us that a new cultural climate is developing and taking hold, which gives crimes against life a new and, if possible, even more sinister character, giving rise to further grave concern. And so what he's talking about here is that if we take away the total freedom and the assistance of healthcare systems to provide what we need to provide, and you already see this even in Catholic hospitals who are doing abortions and who are allowing sterilizations and promoting that for the good and the health of women. And believe me, after 40 years in women's healthcare, this is not authentic women's healthcare. It just is not. And you'll see that in a couple of minutes. God, however, does not want us to have all of the children that we can ever have. Now, I started out yesterday and I told you that God has a plan. And so my wife is number 8 of 9. Suppose her parents decided to stop at 7. I would not have my wife. I would not have my 2 children. I would not have my 10 grandchildren. I might be married to somebody else. I might have other children, but not the way it is. Suppose Catherine of Siena's parents decided to stop at 21. She was number 22 out of 25. We wouldn't have a Catherine of Siena. God has a plan. He calls married couples to responsible parenthood, and the sequence of their responsibilities is first to him, and then to your spouse, and then your immediate, your children and extended family, and to society. And what has her culture done? We've inverted it. Your primary responsibilities to society, population, poverty, food, climate, everything else, and not to God. God knows how to take care of his universe that he created. He knows how to take care of his planet. He knows what we need. We do have to be good stewards. However, periodic continence, as I mentioned in the catechism, and methods of NFP do not violate the dictates of God's plan for life and love. The other question that you might want to ask yourself philosophically is, if there was already a method that you could use that was 98 to 99% effective and cheap and had no side effects, then why do we need the pharmaceutical industry giving us, quote unquote, artificial contraception? And the other thing, we just heard that the supreme gift of a marriage is a child. The most serious side effect, in quotes, if you will, of natural family planning's quote unquote failure, if you want to call it that, is a child, which is the supreme gift of a marriage. The other thing as an English major that always fascinated me about the word contraception is that if you break it down into component parts, contra means life, and inception means conception or the beginning of life. So Satan just calls it what it is. I'm against life. And here are all the drugs and all the products and all the things that you can do. And 99% of them involve women. Only 1% involves men with the condoms. 99%, you can put hormones into your body, an implant into your arm, piece of plastic up inside your uterus, a big piece of saran wrap around your vagina and your external genitalia called the female condom. It's called Reality, which nobody ever uses, and it's very expensive. He just calls it what it is. And all of us in the natural family planning world, we're arguing over, natural family planning's not really attractive. It sounds so weird. How about if we call it just family planning? No, that's the, how about if we call it fertility awareness? We're arguing in the weeds. The devil's in the details. We're in the weeds arguing over it, and the contraceptors just call it what it is. So contraception violates the nature of the conjugal act. It separates love and life and babies and bonding. It's anti-life. Contraception itself is not a sexual act. If I was standing here holding an IUD in front of you, it's just an object. Not any different than any other object. It's how you use it and what you're using it for, and its only purpose is to prevent life. It has no other good. It has no other purpose. It has no other need. It has no other function other than to prevent life. It's a willing against life. And people that are not engaging in sexual activity cannot therefore contracept, because contraception is a willing against life. And if you're not engaging, I can remember the first time I went to pick my wife up for a date, and I was 18 and she was 17, and we were going out, and we were going out the door, and I said goodbye to her parents, and her mother yells out and says, "Remember, Betty." Her father called her Lizzie, and her mother called her Betty. She says, "Remember, Betty, sex makes babies." Now, from a woman who had 9 children and 144 grandchildren when she passed away, I guess she kind of knew a little bit about what she was talking about. On the flip side, philosophically, with natural family planning, women are born with all the eggs they're ever going to have. So you have about 500,000 when you're born. You have about 50,000 when you go through puberty, a little bit more than a couple of million when you're born, but they dissipate over time. And by the time you're 40 years old, you're down to 50,000. And by the time you go through menopause, you're down to none. And so gradually over time, women's fertility is gradually declining. But women are only fertile one day a month, and that egg only lives 12 to 24 hours. So if you accurately knew which day a woman was ovulating, and you abstain for that 24-hour period in theory, and I'll get to another part of it in a minute, then if you had conjugal intimacy, you would never accidentally, remember sex makes babies, so there is no such thing as an accident, have a child, unless you wanted one. Now, there is a fertile window of about 100 hours because men mess everything up, as they usually do. Men are fertile 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 366 in a leap year, well into their 60s, sometimes into their 70s, and sperm can live for 5 days in fertile mucus. So the fertile window is roughly 6 days a month. And if you knew when that was going to happen, if you wanted to conceive, you would concentrate your intimacy during that window. And if you wanted to not conceive, then you would concentrate your intimacy and abstain appropriately until your responsible parenthood made you discern what it is that you wanted to do. The other thing about natural family planning is that it fulfills the theology of the body teaching of self-gift. John Paul tells us that we really can't know ourselves unless we give ourselves to each other completely. When I walk into the bedroom in my spouse and I say, I give myself to you willingly, but I'm going to contracept tonight so you can't have my fertility. Or on the other hand, she says, I receive you and I'll give myself to you, but you can't have my fertility. Well, then you're withholding. And that's a lie. And the lie then perpetrates the rest of your marriage and it penetrates your communication. And so we have a problem. In natural family planning, we have a medical model. NAPRO Technology, Tom Hildreth, Pope Paul VI Institute, appropriately named after Pope Paul VI with Humanae Vitae. And he has the most extensive research, fellowships, and textbooks that document the treatment of every single solitary gynecologic problem that any woman could ever have without using any contraceptive methods. Completely documented, researched, annotated. Why don't you know about it? Because it can't get published in any of the popular OBGYN journals in the United States because they are owned by the pharmaceutical companies. So the Green Journal and the Gray Journal that are the OBGYN maven journals, every article underneath, Dr. So-and-so's research is funded by so-and-so pharmaceutical company. Every one of them. So he self-publishes. He self-publishes his textbook. He self-publishes articles in the British Medical Journal, the Scandinavian Medical Journal. But it is a multi-index method that's very inexpensive. It's environmentally friendly. There's no chemicals. There's no drugs. There's a whole plethora of technology with the OV watch, fertility monitors, and over 1,700 apps that you can now put on your phone. And so now they have an app on your phone that if you use the thermometer with Bluetooth, the temperature goes right into your phone. It charts it. It puts it on a graph. You can send that email or fax it or whatever way you want to do it to an instructor. And so it's not the same as contraception because people not engaging in intimacy cannot contracept. And that's the argument. What's the difference? What's the difference if you don't want to have a baby if you contracept or use NFP? This is the difference. There's no separation of babies and bonding. I'll deviate briefly here from my slides to tell you that I heard a Christopher West story. For those of you who may not know Christopher West, he's a big promoter of theology of the body, and he told a story that if your grandmother was dying, 77 years old, lying in bed, dying, terminal illness, the difference between contraception and natural family planning is that if you're in natural family planning, you allow grandma to die a natural death. Contraception, you walk in and put a pillow over her head and smother her. Outcome's the same, dead grandma. But there is a difference in the means. So you can't justify the end with the means. So natural family planning has no side effects. It's easy to learn. It's very inexpensive. It accommodates itself to age and variation for women. It allows the partners to participate, and it's compatible with God's plan for life and love. Now, what are the reasons that people use the pill? And I'm going to get to the real reason at the end, but I'm just going to say that most of the time they use it to prevent pregnancy. Sometimes they use it for cramps and irregular bleeding and PMS. The newer indication is for acne, but it can stop your periods, and there are a lot of people that don't want their periods, so they like it because it's convenient. But it doesn't treat any condition. There is no scientific article that's ever been done, any studies to prove that it does anything for endometriosis, ovarian cyst, abnormal uterine bleeding, pelvic pain, polycystic ovarian disease, or anything else. No scientific study anywhere. If there's anybody in the room that knows of one, please contact me and let me know because it'll be news to me. Because it's just not out there. And I go to medical conferences every year, multiple times, for CMEs. And they just don't have the studies. Sometimes it's because the parents want it for their kids. Going away to college, going to put you on the pill, and I don't want you to get pregnant. They don't even have a discussion about it. They don't even know what they're doing. Well, let's talk about some of the hormones for a minute. In the year 2000, the National Toxicology Advisory Panel put estrogen on the list of carcinogens. So estrogen is a human carcinogen. In 2005, the International Agency for Research in Cancer published a monograph naming estrogen progesterone pills, the most common form of hormonal contraception, as a class 1 carcinogen, up there with asbestos, nicotine, all these other chemicals. A carcinogen, that means it causes cancer. International Agency for Research in Cancer. Monograph 91, look it up, pull it up, give it to your friends. 2006, Chris Kallenborn, a friend of mine, internal medicine, Latrobe, Pennsylvania, published a meta-analysis looking at all the studies in the literature showing a 44% increase in breast cancer if you take the pill for more than 4 years before your first full-term pregnancy. I'm not going to get into the physiology of breast anatomy and everything right now because it will take a little bit too much time. In 2009, Dolay published an article showing a 340% increase in triple-negative breast cancer in the journal Cancer of Epidemiology and Biomarkers. Not something that I read as a practicing physician every day. And triple-negative breast cancer, for your information, is the hardest to treat because there are no hormones involved, so there's no antagonist that you can give. Health Magazine, 26% increase of breast cancer. Lancet Magazine in 2003, increased risk of cervical cancer secondary to hormonal contraceptives. Now, what's that all about? Well, we all know that number one sexually transmitted disease is human papillomavirus, and we all know the human papillomavirus causes cervical cancer. So what's the relationship with the pill? When you're on the pill, it turns your cervix inside out, just like pregnancy. Because the pill mimics pregnancy. It gives you high hormone levels. So women that are pregnant have a heavy mucousy discharge because their glands are turned inside out and the mucus plugs the cervix. You know, the mucus plug that you lose before you go into labor type thing? Well, when your cervix is turned inside out, the cells that are inside that are now exposed are much more susceptible to the human papillomavirus, which is not protected against with condoms. And once you have it forever. And so there's no treatment. And so that's how it increases your risk of cervical cancer. So with his overview, which was the most extensive published in 2006, we definitely have a relationship between breast cancer and the pill. You can see that the World Health Organization talks about venous thromboembolism, which is blood clots with an increased risk of stroke, heart attack, and high blood pressure. With the third generation progestins, which is a type of hormone that was originally used in Europe before it came to the United States, we had a 2 to 6-fold increase in blood clots. And the longer you take it and the older you get, the higher your risks are. And this is Dr. Angela LaFranchi and Joel Brind in 2005 who published that article showing that correlation. Look at these studies. Increases in breast cancer. What's the bottom one? I just added this to the slide right before I came. New England Journal of Medicine, December of 2017, 1.8 million women, 10.9 years of use, 20% increase in breast cancer using only low-dose pills, 95% confidence interval. What more evidence do you need? It's out there. You're not being told that. No doctor, when you walk into the office, you say, can I help you today? And the girl says, yeah, I want the pill. And the doctor says, got any medical problems? And the girl says, no, I'm pretty healthy. Do you smoke? No, I don't smoke. Okay, here you are. Here's a year's work. Go home. Start them next Sunday. Boom, done. Come back and see me next year. European countries, Germany and Japan, over the counter. $12. Over the counter. Anybody could walk in and buy them. Any high-risk patient could walk in and buy without any medical evaluation. If you're currently taking the pill, 24% increase. If you've taken it for more than a period of 5 years, 58%. And if you're over the age of 45 and you're on it for menopausal symptoms, that's a new thing with no medical indication, you up your rate for breast cancer by 144%. How do they work? Now we get into the other aspect, the abortion issue, okay? 96% of the time, no ovulation, no egg, no baby. Sperm migration, 2% of the time, has progesterone in it, thickens the mucus, makes it impenetrable or less penetrable to the sperm. 1% of the time, it thins out the lining of the uterus and prevents implantation. So you hear references when we're in the other room that there were maybe 58 to 60 surgical abortions since it was legalized in 1973. The Catholic Pharmacist Association estimates that there are over 600 million chemical abortions since 1973 from women taking the pill 1% of the time, multiplied by 12 million women a year through 12 cycles a year over the last 50 years. 600 million. So the 60 million is just under on the top of the surface, and underneath we have abortifacients that are aborting our kids. The morning after pill has a post-fertilization effect documented in the Lineker Quarterly, the Catholic Medical Association journal. We have the Annals of Pharmacology in 2002 with Stanford and Larrymore, and a couple of other articles by from CMA members that emergency contraception and the morning after pill both have a post-fertilization, or if you want more harshly, an abortifacient effect. And so we're aborting our babies and we don't know. These are the studies on HPV. I told you what the incidence with the increase in cancer. It's estimated that 50% of the population is infected with the HPV virus and doesn't even know it. The only way it shows up is an abnormal pap smear. There's no blood test. There's no culture. There's nothing else. And about 80% of females have it by the age of 50. And men don't have any symptoms either. And they don't care because they don't get anything. Although there's some penile cancer and some lung cancers now and some throat cancers that are related to oral sex, but that's not in the literature that much that people know about. These are all the percentages that if you use the pill for more than 10 years and you have HPV, you're almost 100% guaranteed that you will end up with some form of cervical cancer. So we have high blood pressure, blood clots, heart attack, stroke, liver tumors, gallbladder disease, deaths, 40 of them from the patch. You don't hear about the patch anymore. Breast cancer, cervical cancer, and depression, all associated with hormonal contraception. John Paul II tells us that natural family planning challenges us to respect the body of our spouses. There's a new one. Respect of life, not just preborn in utero, but everyone. Love God, love your neighbor as yourself. It encourages tenderness between the spouses. You actually talk. What's your temperature today, hon? Are you wet or are you dry? I don't know. I have to put it on the chart. Oh, wait a minute. We're in a fertile window. Okay, the honeymoon starts next Wednesday. Okay, fine. I'll bring you home flowers. And every month you have a honeymoon. Every month you have a reengagement. Every month you have a conversation. My wife and I do pre-cana. Most couples spend more time talking about the cardstock that they're going to use for the place invitations at the wedding than they do about how many children they're going to have and when they're going to have them. It favors education of an authentic freedom. It's an innate language. It's written on our hearts, the natural law, and it supports babies and bonding and love and life. On contraception, he says, it's an objectively contradictory language. It's completely opposite of love and life. It's saying, yes, I want you, but no, I don't want your eggs. Yes, I want you, but I don't want your sperm. It's about babies and bonding. It leads to a positive refusal of an openness to life, and it's a falsification of the inner truth of conjugal love. Now let's look at the social implications. We've had an increase of the divorce rate from 5 to close to 41%. It was 5% in 1960. It's now 41%. What year did the pill come on the market? 1960. Where are we now? Is there any correlation? Take a graph and plot breast cancer, divorce rate, pill. Three parallel lines since 1960. All on the same graph. Children affected by divorce, over 400,000 to 1.2 million. 54% of children grow up in single-parent households, and the rise in divorce parallels the use of contraception. What are we doing to ourselves? We have an increase in the number of unmarried women that are giving birth. 40% of all of our births are now to unmarried women. Almost half. Increase in child abuse and neglect. Abortion parallels the increased use of contraceptives. Geez, I thought birth control pills were supposed to cut down on abortion. Well, you pro-lifers are supposed to be in support of birth control pills. So what's the problem? I'll tell you what the problem is. There's a 1% failure rate with the pill. 12 million women are on the pill. 1% of it fails, even if you take it the way it's supposed to happen. You went into it saying, I don't want a baby. It failed. Now you have a baby. But your attitude is, I don't want a baby. So how are you going to get rid of it? You're going to abort it because you never wanted a baby in the first place. So it's a lie. Contraception parallels abortion. It doesn't decrease abortion. We're still doing over 1 million a year. There's still going to be 3,300 today. There's going to be a couple hundred while we're in this room, while we're standing here and talking about it, all over the United States. And in the United States, it's 1 million. You know what it is in India? 16 million a year. And you know what's going to happen? Ireland is looking at their parliament and they're looking at their constitution to change from pro-life to pro-abortion in April of this year. All over the world, hundreds of millions of children. So we're seeing an increase in violent juvenile crime, drug abuse, suicide, depression, all sociologic ills. Now look at this. Sexually transmitted diseases, 20 million new ones every year diagnosed, one quarter, 25% of them in teenagers. In 2000, 8.39 billion dollars in 1998, we're now up to $16 billion in 2016 on sexually transmitted diseases. Only because of one behavior. It's not because I walked into the room and I gave you my whooping cough or my measles or my mumps or the flu or anything else. All this thing about Zika virus, all this thing about flu and flu shots and everything. Look at this. $16 billion for STDs in 2016. And Planned Parenthood, between 2002 and 2008, got $2.5 billion, and they get $500 million every year from us in our tax dollars. The pill, $600 a year if you're buying it on your own, $6 billion. Abortions, $3.9, almost $4 billion, because the backup is abortion if your pill fails or your if your method of contraception fails. Psychologically, we see decreased libido. We have a change in hormones. You know, there is a histocompatibility complex where people give off certain chemical odors to themselves that attract males to females and vice versa. When a woman's on the pill, it changes her major histocompatibility complex, and men who would not normally be attracted to her become attracted to her, and when she goes off the pill, her hormones change back, her pheromones change back, and now they're not compatible, and they end up divorcing. And so they've seen these in the studies that they've looked at. There's a continued violation of natural law. There's a decreased self-esteem, looking at women as sex objects, and an increase in pornography. So all the things that John Paul predicted that you heard yesterday and this morning with Dominion, where all have come true that Pope Paul VI predicted in 1968. So we're wounded by this culture of death. And I'm part of the problem. And the reason why I'm part of the problem is for 21 years, I abused you women, maybe not anybody in this room because I'm too old, but I abused you women for 21 years by giving out hormonal contraception and putting in IUDs and putting in hormonal implants and doing sterilizations. And 20 years ago this Lent, I was confronted by a Catholic priest at a Bible study who was introduced to me and asked me what I did for a living and asked me what I did about contraception in my practice. And I told him that that's what patients come in for and that's what I'm trained to do and that's what I do. And he asked me, so how do you reconcile that and coming up to receive the Eucharist on Sunday? And then, he followed up by sending me an envelope in the mail with a copy of Janet Smith's Contraception, Why Not? And a copy of John Paul II's Evangelium Vitae and an invitation to a natural family planning class. And the following Sunday, I did not get out of the pew to receive the Eucharist. But I said to my wife, how can I give up contraception? I'm going to get fired. My partners are going to, you know, what am I going to do? I don't know anybody that doesn't do contraception. This is not what I was trained to do. I've been doing this and doing it really well for 21 years. And she says, well, I'll do whatever it is that you decide to do. 6 months later, I had her homily, the first one ever from a brand new priest from Charles Borromeo Seminary. And it was against contraception, abortion, and euthanasia. And his finger landed up 6 inches from my nose. My son said to me, "Dad, I think he's talking to you." And the next day I went into my practice, told my partners. I had my salary reduced by a third. We had to sell our home, downsize our life, changed everything. And I became involved in the pro-life movement and an NFP-only OBGYN. And the rest is history. And that's why I'm standing here today. So these bottom things are killing us, and they're killing our families, and they're killing our marriages, and they're killing women. And this is, as I said, mostly against women. We treat fertility as a disease. And I want to fast forward here a little bit past. One of the things that we have to do in medicine is we have to give informed consent. We got to tell people what the meaning and what the complications are of what it is that we're doing for them, whether it's a surgery or whether it's giving them a medication, you can have an allergic reaction. So what I did was I took a package insert from one of the popular pills, and this is the end, so I only got a couple of minutes. I only need you to look at the red stuff. It does not protect against HIV and sexually transmitted diseases. It thins out the lining of the uterus and reduces the likelihood of implantation. I didn't add that. That's what's in the package insert in parentheses. If the manufacturer of the pill is telling you that it prevents implantation, you don't have to argue that it's an abortive fashion because the maker is telling you that that's what it does. It's indicated for the prevention of pregnancy. And now you can use it to treat moderate to severe acne in females over 15 who have no known contraindications, who have had their first period, and they're unresponsive to other anti-medications and desire contraception. It's not the number one drug of choice for pimples, ladies and gentlemen. It just isn't. Talk to a dermatologist. Oh, and here we have a risk of heart attack, thromboembolism, stroke, liver tumors, gallbladder disease, and underlying risk factors such as obesity, diabetes, and hyperlipidemia that may increase those risks. 54 studies, meta-analysis, thanks to Dr. Callenborn. Small increase in the frequency of the risk of breast cancer. You got a little bit of chance of getting cancer. Wouldn't you want to know that before you go on the medication? So you go to the airport, you got tickets to Disney, and they say, you know, we land most of the time, but occasionally we crash. You going to get on the plane? Risk of cervical cancer, liver tumors, blood clots behind the eye. And earlier studies, an increased lifetime relative risk of gallbladder surgery because of the estrogen and the hormones. So everything passes by way of the family. The most important foundation to keep safe is the family for the good of society. We all have a responsibility for that. We're all part of God's family. We're all brothers and sisters. Modern technology can extend the forces of evil through the world at an alarming rate. You saw what Elizabeth said about social media. Take a page out of their book. We can use the same technology to spread the good word, to tell the truth. That's why I became the president of the Catholic Medical Association. I want people to know the truth. You know how many members we had in 1968? 10,000. You know how many we have right now? 2,300. You want to know why? Because when Humanae Vitae hit, they all left. And they haven't come back because they can't reconcile the contraceptive teachings of the Catholic Church. And our mission statement is that we will uphold the teachings of the magisterium of the Catholic Church in the practice of medicine and science. That is what our mission is. And we will not let go of that. We will not back down. Fertility is not a disease. It's a gift to be cherished. My wife and I know that personally. And we physicians, because now you need a prescription. This is one of the things that I kind of have a little personal bias with the opioid epidemic, and they're blaming the pharmaceutical companies. You can't get legal opioids in the United States without a prescription from a doctor. You have to have a DEA number. I have to have a DEA number to write a narcotic. If they want to find out if I'm overprescribing narcotics, all they have to do is go on the DEA website, look me up, and they'll see how many. Okay, I'm taking away your DEA number. You can't write narcotics anymore. Go after the doctors first that are writing too many things. That's the easy answer. You don't have to sue the pharmaceutical companies. If somebody wants to use them, they're going to make them. That's business. But you can't get it without a prescription unless it's illegal. You can't get the pill or an IUD or an implant without a prescription. So we are the key. But you women, I'm just going to pose to you one to the men in the room. Suppose there was a male contraceptive. And suppose it slightly increased your risk of prostate cancer. And it made you a little bloated and you gained about 3 or 4 pounds a month and your belt got a little tight and you had to let it out. And you got some pelvic cramping down here in the area of your prostate gland, and your testicles swelled up a little bit, and you got a little bit puffy, and you got a little bit of drips of blood coming from the end of your penis. And it increased your risk of heart attack, and it increased your risk of stroke, and it increased your risk of blood clots, and it increased your risk of gallbladder disease, and it cost $60 a month, and you had to take it every day. How many guys in this room would volunteer to take that so that they wouldn't get somebody pregnant? So that they could have uncommitted, unfettered sexual activity and never have to worry about fathering a baby. How many guys? Raise your hand. So then why do you let the women that you love take them? Why? So I think the final thing I want to leave you with, you can turn the lights back on if you may. We physicians are called to first do no harm. And so I will not ever harm, and I'm committed to not harming any woman ever again. I have no idea. I was writing 8 to 10 prescriptions a day, 4 days a week that I was in the office, because one day I was in the hospital and on call. For young girls taking the pill for a period of 21 years, thousands and thousands and thousands of prescriptions, and 1% of them were aborted. And I cried when I had to confess that at the end of my conversion, when I had to go to confession to a priest. And, of course, as it turned out, I was at a retreat at Malvern Retreat House right outside Philadelphia. And I figured, well, this is a good priest to go to. He doesn't know me. And I get in there, and here's the chairman of the theology department of Villanova University. So he and I had a nice conversation. But I walked out of that confession in tears, and I said two things. I'll never do it again, and I'll never say no to God again. So thank you all for listening. And if you have time for questions, we can do a couple of questions.